Hi, and welcome to the Mom Struggling Well podcast. My name is Emily Thomas, and I am a mom on a mission to get a new perspective. Y'all, I am not proud of it, but I spent far too long waiting for my daily irritations to resolve before the good times can begin. And I'm thinking the struggles are just going to keep coming, so I might as well get a new plan. God promises if we persevere through our daily struggles, our character will be built and we'll end up with a hope that doesn't disappoint. And I don't know about you, but my hardest days happen when I've lost sight of that hope. So if that's your story too, join me each week as I interview someone who has passed from just struggling to struggling well. Hey there, folks. I'm so glad you're here. This is episode 47, and I'm talking to my friend Nicole DeFord. She is a wife and a mom of two children. She has a wildly successful handmade business that actually was partially fueled by a pretty traumatic event with one of her kids. She tells us more about that. She also talks about the struggle that happens when you compare yourself to other moms and what we need to do instead. She also gives me a solid rationale behind all of her tattoo choices. And she shares her powerful and pretty hysterical story about the first time she started asking questions about God. You guys, Nicole is so funny and down to earth. You're really going to love hearing from her. At least I apparently think she's funny because she really got me laughing in this interview. All right, let's go ahead and jump right in. Hi, Nicole. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Emily. Hi.
So tell everybody about who you are. I want to call you Jellybird Signs, but that's not your actual name.
No, actually. My name's Nicole. I am a 30-something mom, work-at-home mom, stay-at-home mom with two kids here in Southern California. Married, 7 years now to my husband, Will. He helps out around the shop with me.
You both full-time do the shop or he also has a job?
He actually has a job elsewhere, full-time job elsewhere, and then comes home and this is his side gig that lets him play with power tools. So he's okay about that.
Oh, yeah. So he does the putting together of the signs and you paint the signs?
For the most part, I mean, technically I can and do both, but I consider it when I do it, I like to do like a prototype or I'm trying to figure out if I like the way that a sign works. And then once it comes down to, okay, now I want 20 of them, that's when I go, okay, cool. Now you put together 20 of them because I did the first one or you know, that sort of thing. So
I see. Okay. So tell me about Jellybird Signs. It started in 2012. Well, I guess I'm going to tell you a little, I'm going to tell you what I know. And you tell me the rest. Okay. So it started in 2012. You wanted to decorate your house on a budget. So just make some signs. Yeah. We all do that. I do it, but it's on like a note card and it's with a Sharpie and it looks terrible. So you did it a different way.
Yeah.
Firstly, where did the name of your shop come from?
Emily, I'm going to tell you what. I have got to come up with a good story about this because that has got to be one of the first questions people ask about the shop.
Yeah. And you don't have a good story?
No, my story is literally... Will and I sat around. First off, we're horrible at naming things. And we're the kind of people that goes, oh, you know, should we name the couch? It's named Couchy. You know, that's it. I can't believe our kids escaped unscathed. They're not girl and boy. So
good. You're winning.
When we decided that we actually wanted to turn what we were doing into something official, we literally sat around one night spitballing words that we thought were funny and words that that sounded funny coming out of our mouths or that sounded fun to say, you know, that like, you know, oh, I love to say that. That sounds fun. So we made a list and started putting them together. This and this and this and this. And I can't even remember the other ones other than I remember there was Unique Tumbleweed. So we very well could have been Unique Tumbleweed.
I like Jellybird Signs.
Thank you. I know. So do I. I'm partial to it now. But yeah, we narrowed it down to five combinations that we liked. And a friend of ours was a graphic designer who had said that he could sketch something out for us. And when we gave him the five options that we had come down to, we said, do any of these speak to you? And he just said, oh, hands down, Jellybird. I already know what it looks like. It's this silly little bird. And that's where the Jellybird was born. But
there you go.
That's it. There's no, you know, special, oh, my great-grandmother always used to make jelly and there was a bird that sang on the window. You know, that's the story I should come up with.
Well, it sounds like you've already got the framework of the fake story.
I'll just flesh it out a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I know a little bit of the backstory about why you decided to go full-time with the sign thing and it involved kind of a traumatic situation with your son.
At the time, let's see, my son, he's 5 years old now. He was probably about 18 months at the time. And I was pregnant with our second child, our daughter, who is three. I was working at a graphic design firm and it was a really fun job at the at the time, my son was in childcare because I was working. And though it was a very fun job and I was enjoying it, I feel like I constantly had that feeling of just guilt that I wasn't at home, guilt that my son was in childcare. And I just remember it all coming to a head one day. I got a phone call. It was my husband, and he never called me at work just because he knew I was working. Mm. And so that in and of itself, I automatically just clenched a little bit because I was getting a phone call, not a text from him. And I just remember the tone of his voice when I answered the phone, and he just asked me, he said, "Babe, are you sitting down?" And I was like, okay, what? And so I sat down, and he just goes, "Parker had a seizure. Mm. Parker stopped breathing.
Oh my gosh.
My dad, who was his dad, my father-in-law, administered CPR and called the ambulance, and he's in the hospital. He's in the hospital right now, and I'm going to go get there." And then everything, I just lost everything. Everything just started spinning, and I just thought, my baby is in the hospital. My baby stopped breathing. My baby's in the hospital. My baby had a seizure. My baby. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't even see him to see what did he look like. Was he crying? Was he upset? Did he want me? Did he know where he was? I was so upset.
Yeah.
And at the time, the where I was working was about 40 miles away from the hospital he was taken to. But it was just one of those perfect storm combinations of the time of day that it was and the freeways that I would have to take to get there.
Southern California, yeah.
Yes, absolutely. It took me 2 hours to get there.
Oh,
and that
gosh.
Was using HOV lanes because my supervisor said, "I'm going with you. I'm going to drive," because I couldn't drive. I couldn't anything. I was so frantic.
Yeah.
So not only was it then easier because I could use the HOV lanes, but she was there for moral support as well and drove me there, got me there. And I just remember getting inside and seeing mommy was the last one there. My mother-in-law, my father-in-law was there. My husband was there. I'm sure if my neighbor could have been there, my neighbor would have been there. And the pizza guy, like I literally just felt like, wah, wah. And then mommy's here to pay the bill. It was just, and mom. And I was so upset. And I just, I can't say that was the only factor. There were definitely other factors involved where it was just, we knew we really kind of wanted to push forward with this, but I could definitely say that was the final factor that really nailed it in and said, we have to make this work, because I wasn't okay with that. That didn't sit right with me. And I didn't want something like that to happen again, especially if this kind of thing could happen again. I didn't want that to happen. I mean, luckily he was in the care of my father-in-law at that point, but what if he had been at or I don't know.
Yeah. Wow. And he's good now?
Yes, he's good now. It actually, and they're the type of seizures that you get when you have a fever. And at the time we didn't know, so they weren't sure if he was epileptic or not. It's not something that's hereditary, so it's not anything that we could have known that he was going to get. And apparently most children grow out of them by age 5.
Okay.
It just means that when he gets a fever, we have to be incredibly cautious and essentially control it.
Well, I'm so thankful that he was with your father-in-law and it all worked out well, but wow.
Yeah.
What a trauma.
Yeah. I'll agree.
So would you say that's the best part of having a shop, is that you get to stay home with your kids? Or?
Absolutely. Though it's not like, we all work alongside each other in one big, happy, like Snow White whistling, they're my little helpers in the workshop all the time kind of thing. Like, I don't want to make it sound like that, where everything's just blissful all the time. But there's definitely something to be said for being able to not only stay home with them, but have that kind of flexibility that when Parker then wants to go do Taekwondo or Paisley wants to do dance or something, and I still have to work, or, something has to change, that I'm essentially the author of the flexibility of the day. And I can say, okay, if that has to happen, then I'm going to stain stuff this time, or I'm going to, kind of move my stuff around and still get work done, but I can do it in such a way that I can still be flexible with my family as well. So,
yes, so good. So I've got a question. You've got a lot of signs that you sell. You've got a lot of people wanting your signs. Mm-hmm. And from what I understand, things get a little frantic and people can get a little cuckoo about their sign. Do you find that people are mean sometimes? I see that some people have to like say, "Hey, can we be nice on Instagram?"
Yeah.
And
you know what? That actually has gotten a lot better. I don't know if it's just an overall tone of kindness across the board on Instagram, just because I know I'm not the only person, the only shop that sort of thing happens to.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't mean you. I just sensed that in like the handmade scene.
I think in any online arena, there is a tendency to forget that who you are speaking to is, in fact, another person. There's that blanket of anonymity that comes along with doing things online where you don't actually have that same level of societal standards that you would have if you were speaking to a person face to face. And so I think it's less of a, I'm intentionally trying to dig at you or hurt you or make you upset, and more of a, oh, I didn't even think about that. I was venting frustration and it didn't occur to me. It was essentially like doing it to your face and that might hurt your feelings kind of thing. So that has actually toned down a lot recently. And I don't know if it's just people in general don't do it as much anymore, or they do it privately to each other and not in my feed.
Well, I'm glad though, because it's just not worth it.
Yeah. And I think that no matter what, you do try to keep a business face on and you try to think about everything on a business level. But that being said, you definitely do take things personally, and somehow hearing that type of talk, you know, oh, I didn't get it. Oh, this sucks. Oh, I'm unfollowing you, that kind of thing. The only thing that I then hear from that is, you didn't do enough, or you're not working hard enough, or you're not. And I just sit there and go, how could I possibly do more? And that's when I have to kind of backtrack and go, that's the wrong line of thought. You will never be able to do enough. So, you know, work within your parameters and work within your boundaries. And the ones who are interested and the ones who want to stay will stay. And then the ones who don't won't. And through that, you'll kind of cultivate essentially a community of people who are interested in my stuff and working within essentially the limits of my shop.
Yeah. Well, okay. So speaking of that, you had told me that one of the struggles that you had as a mom would be like relating mom to mom, sometimes just feeling good enough in that area as well.
Mm-hmm.
Speak to that. What does that mean to you?
Gosh, feeling good enough.
You feel like other moms are doing a better job at something, or?
I tend to think that all the time, every day, as a matter of fact. you know, there always seems to be something that comes up where I think that sometimes you're so used to what it is that's in your own home that you don't realize other people might do it differently or better, or however it is you want to phrase it, until you see somebody else doing it. You know, for example, you walk into somebody else's house and you go, oh my gosh, I haven't stepped on any toys in here and I've already walked 10 feet. How is this happening? Or I don't see any dishes in your sink. Do you guys eat? Or that kind of thing. And you just go, oh gosh, you can see what I had for lunch yesterday if you look at my counter, or that kind of thing. Or even just today, as a matter of fact, I was walking with my kids to Costco and we didn't have any milk this morning. And so I did the whole, oh, you guys want to go to McDonald's and we can get hotcakes and chocolate milk if you want? And they were like, yeah. So I'm walking into Costco with my bags of McDonald's with me, and I'm walking. And as I'm walking, I'm just thinking to myself, whenever everyone's looking at me that I just fed my kids McDonald's in the morning and we're walking into Costco and, you know, my daughter's hair is all over the place and everything. And I realize so much of that is something that I automatically put on myself, not even necessarily something that people say. So
Yeah,
I think that comparison to me automatically jumps up anytime I see something that's different than what I do. My immediate inclination is almost to say, oh, well, they're obviously doing it better than I'm doing it. Oh, goodness. What am I doing wrong?
Yeah, I know it is. But sometimes you see the super duper picture perfect and it's really ugly on the other side. And so I think you guys are messy hair and pancakes. I mean, that sounds a whole lot more fun to me. So how is being a mom different than what you thought it'd be? Were you one of those people who always wanted to be a mom?
Actually, no. And that I always think that probably ties into then my feelings of either guilt or feeling lesser than as a mom. So many women, I think, approach motherhood with that feeling. It's a sense of fulfillment, something that they had been striving for, that they had essentially been working towards all their life, whether it is to be a stay-at-home mom or to work outside of the home and be home. Just in general, the idea of being a mother is something that is so obviously ingrained in many women's minds. And for me, I actually was never really good with kids. I never enjoyed babysitting very much. It was always just kind of way to make a few extra bucks, that kind of thing. And I can even recall especially even in dating my husband, in my mind, it was, if my husband wants kids, yeah, I could do that. If they don't want kids, yeah, I could do that too, kind of thing. So that's kind of probably kind of where I was to begin with.
So how have you found it?
Amazing. I mean, it's beyond any experience that I could have ever wished for myself or wanted. The moment we found out that we were pregnant, it turned into this, oh my goodness, I'm so excited. I can't wait to meet him. I can't wait to meet her. I can't wait to meet it. We're making something. I'm making something. I'm, you know, today I think I made a lung. I'm so excited. I have no idea. What did you do? I'm so excited today. I, as a matter of fact, with both of them, I was surprised by how quickly I felt that I had fallen in love with something that I hadn't seen. Mm. And I mean, my kids are absolutely crazy, not so delightful. I think they're spitting images of their mom and their dad in all of their wildness. But yeah, it was something that was hard for me to really essentially come to terms with, was the idea that I was going to be moving forward and essentially chasing after something that I didn't have that drive and passion for that I saw other people have. And so that kind of made me feel like, was I doing it wrong that I wasn't as excited for this as other people were, or I wasn't, I always felt like I don't have that natural touch or tendency. Rather, I don't know if I want to say it was learned, but it was something that happened to me because I got pregnant, I got pregnant because I wanted it, if that makes sense.
Yes. Yeah. I kind of have the exact opposite. I super wanted kids. And when I got them, I'm like, time out. This is super hard. But here you are every day. I love them too, but I was like, whoa.
Are we doing this again? That's crazy. It's like Groundhog Day.
Exactly. You're still here. Okay. So how do you find that being a mom has made you a different person?
I would love to say that it's made me more patient and loving and caring. And in reality, I mean, it really has. I think that I always talk to my husband about how fun it would be to write down all of the descriptions of things that we give to our kids and essentially make almost like a children's dictionary. Like when one of the kids goes, what is that? Why is that? Whatever. And we have to then break it down into those smaller sentences or easier to understand terms. I'm like, dude, we should really be writing this down. We could make bank on this book that I'm telling you we should write. But my feeling with my kids, essentially kind of the person that I am becoming, it's having to look at the world from a different point of view and looking at it from trying to explain something to a child when they don't have experiences for why that would be interesting or for why. I don't think I'm really explaining this really well, but just that
you're having to deconstruct everything you know to be true. Exactly. And then as they get a little older, convince them that you're not too big of an idiot to know what's actually happening.
Which is really funny. My son, all the time, my son's 5 and he's already gotten to the point that like, we'll get in the car and we'll tell him, we're going to the drive-in, or we're going to such and such new place or something. And we'll be driving and he'll go, do you even know how to get there? And we stop and we go, yeah, yes, mommy and daddy are grown-ups. Grown-ups know how to get places. That automatic, well, grown-ups know. So yes, grown-ups have Google on their phone.
We have GPS. Yeah. Come on.
You don't have to do this, young man.
Oh my goodness. So what would you say is the best thing that your mom taught you?
Gosh, I'd have to say knowing when and how to have a little bit of fun. That was always something that my mom did, was she would have that feeling that, you know what, today we're all in a funk, we're all grumpy, let's go out and grab some ice cream. Just that feeling of, we don't have to continue pushing forward if it's not working. Let's take a step back, take a break, have some fun, regroup, and then jump back into it.
That's really good. How do you do that? Do you continue that?
Yeah, I probably continue it to a fault. I'm definitely that person that's like, hey, let's go do something fun. And they're like, we're already doing something fun. I'm like, yeah, let's do something funner. The fun is on top of the fun. I like to look at it where it's, we're all sitting around the house and we're going nuts. And I just kind of go, okay, what's the quickest thing we can do? Do we want to go grab bikes and bike to Yogurt Land? So not even just, we're all going on an adventure now, we're going to bike to Yogurt Land. I guess following through with the kids, watching them get excited over something that could be so silly and simple, but really kind of changes up what it is that we're doing and gets them out there. And then we all end up bonding in some wonderful way that if I had a blog, I'd write about it and it'd be wonderful. But I don't, so I just remember it.
There you go. Just remember it. I think that it's funny, the things they like. We have water at the end of our street, like a lake, or I don't know what you call it. And so we walk down there with bread to feed the ducks.
Oh, uh-huh.
And their favorite thing to do is eat the duck bread, the kids. And I'm like, it's old bread. That's why we give it to the ducks. Like, it's the end of the loaf of bread and it's old.
Yeah.
And they think it's awesome to eat duck bread. So, okay.
Yeah.
Super duper.
I think that's important too, to really stop and realize that sometimes we can get so caught up in wanting to make whatever the adventure or whatever the thing is so elaborate that we fail to realize that really what was our rough draft or the outline per se, you know, the initial even thought or idea is already so brilliantly exciting to the kids that it didn't even need all those other layers and ins and outs that we put in. They probably were excited with just duck bread. I mean, we're going to give it to ducks too. Oh, that's exciting. Oh, okay. And then, you know.
Yeah, that's a really good point. We do make it too hard.
Yeah.
We totally do. Okay, this is off topic, but you love tattoos.
Oh, I do.
I love them too, but I tend to change my mind a lot and make bad choices. And so this is just my question. How do you choose, since this is going to be on there forever, forever? Is it like Jelly Bird signs? You're just like throwing stuff out there?
That's an interesting thing to ask. There was actually a point in my life earlier, actually, before I met my husband, where there was a tattoo that I wanted to get. And the more and more I thought about it, the more and more elaborate that I got. And I had someone draw it out for me. And it turned from it was these three little things I was just going to put on my back that represented a karate dojo that I used to train at. And I was like, oh, this will be great. I'm going to put our dojo motto on the back. And by the time it was just going to be three little Korean characters. And by the time I was done thinking about it, I mean, there was like a tiger and there was an eagle and bamboo and the moon. It was a back piece. I mean, it was like a full on piece. And I just thought to myself, no, if I can't even choose a shirt that I would wear every day for an entire year, how could I choose a tattoo that will be on my skin for life? And so I kind of set it to the side and never really picked that one back up again per se, but actually my real tattoo journey, as in actually getting something on me, and then I essentially every decision from that point on was marked by something that to me is unchanging, in the sense that it's not something that, you know, oh, I don't really like vanilla anymore, or I don't really like the color blue anymore. For me, my tattoos are all about my faith.
Okay.
And so that is something that will always be core and central to the choices that I make, the way that I'm living. And to me, getting tattoos that are memorable to me or remind me of things that I'm trying to keep in my mind on a daily basis, it's like the idea of writing it on a tablet around your neck, keeping it always in your mind. The first ones that I got are on my wrist. And for anyone who is a tattoo aficionado, they always cringe because essentially they are upside down. Tattoos should be facing the people around you so that they can read them. But I have my first tattoos facing myself so that I can read them. And they say, I surrender all to thee on my wrist. Mm. So that as I lift my hands in worship, that's something that I see. And it happened after I got them to commemorate a particularly difficult time in our marriage and our lives in general, where essentially everything was taken from us, our house, our jobs, everything we had ended up having to move in with my in-laws, which was a blessing to have a home, but it was just very difficult with a new baby and my son. And it was just a very crazy time for me in a period of major upheaval in our marriage, in our shop, in every real aspect of our lives. And once we essentially got out of that tunnel, over that bridge, out of that season of our life, it just occurred to me, I don't ever want to forget that it is all his. Mm. Everything that I have, he can take away and then give again and then take away. And so the I surrender all to thee is essentially saying, you know, it was my way of remembering, I'm thanking you so much for bringing us into this new season where we are out of that pit that we were in. But I want to always be mindful that even this new season can be taken away and everything is liquid in that sense. I mean, none of this is mine. I have been granted it.
And he's still good, even if.
Exactly. Exactly. Just to always be mindful of that. And then after 10 years walking in Christ, I got my unashamed tattoo.
Okay.
It seemed appropriate for Romans 1:16.
Yeah.
That one to commemorate that. And then my absolute favorite, the bind my wandering heart to thee verse. That to me, I came to Christ at a later age than I think people do. And so I have no actual scientific evidence for that. There was no study on that. You know, most people average 7 years old at BBS. And no, I have no idea. Anyway.
Well, how old are you?
I was 20 when I came to Christ. So
okay.
I knew no Christians, nor did I have Christians in my family.
Okay. Well, what happened then? Just curious.
Oh, are you asking for testimony, Emily?
Well, yeah, I'm just curious. Like, what? Yeah, if you didn't know any Christians and you had no influence.
I didn't anything. I was actually, I was dating I always call him the Christian that fell off the bandwagon at the time. Okay. The guy that I was dating at the time, who is not my husband, as a matter of fact. I was dating a guy at the time who essentially started to feel very convicted that he did want to return to his beliefs, spoke to me about what Christianity meant to him. Okay. I was enraged, felt very upset at what I perceived to be his narrow-mindedness and his failure to understand how awesome I was and that he should probably stay with me for the rest of his life. And we broke up. I was very upset about the whole thing. And I spent about a week just brooding and being very, even just thinking about it, it just reminds me of a very murky, dark period of time in my life. And I wandered into my local mall that happened to have a C28 for Colossians 2:8. I don't know if you have those Christian bookstores out there.
No.
I actually don't even know if they exist anymore. I just happened to know that there was one in this particular mall that I was in. And as I'm walking into this mall, I see this really cute guy that, for reasons unknown, I happened to know worked at this place. I did not know him. I had just seen him in this store before. And I see him walking out. He's got a Bible under his arm and like a couple of posters and everything. And I think to myself, oh, this is going to be fantastic. I'm going to stop this dude. I'm going to talk to him about his stupid beliefs. And I'm going to, almost like a Darth Vader, like I'm going to turn him to the dark side. I'm going to bring him over to the dark side with me. And then I'm going to feel better about this whole thing. And
okay.
You know, I said to him what probably every evangelizing Christian would like to hear. I said to him, can I ask you some questions about Christ? I mean, his eyes just dropped and his jaw dropped open. He goes, yes, do you have a minute? Let's go sit over here. And so he did. And I just blurted out every silly question that I could think of. And I mean, the man, he just kept flipping through the book and he had answers for everything and was just frustrating me every turn. Cause I was like, well, what about this? And he would pull something else out and I'd be like, fantastic. Thanks for nothing. That's just fantastic.
Thanks for nothing.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of how I felt. And at the end of it, he just goes, you know what? You had some great questions and I'm so glad that we had a chance to talk. And this is the most important part. Cause he goes, but don't take my word for it. Go home and pray. Go home and ask God. And I was like, okay, thank you. You know, sure, your voice, you know? So I did, I went home and angrily did. I think my prayer was more something like, by the way, God, please remind me that I'm right and tell me that everyone else is wrong and this is how it should be and blah, 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 blah. And I went to go hop into the shower after that awful prayer. And, you know, it was, okay, tell me, show me if I need to know. And I hopped into the shower. And Emily, I tell you, a thought, you know, you know what your thoughts feel like. You know what they look like. You know what they sound like. It sounds like yourself blabbing to yourself in your head. You know, I don't really know how to explain what a thought feels like, but that's what it is. And, I mean, I was just there and I was just mumbling and grumbling. And then all of a sudden a thought that was not in my own literally just got placed in my head. And it just said, why are you fighting so hard against me? And a image of a brick wall melting went through my mind. And it was like, all of a sudden I knew. It was just zero doubt. It was absolute certainty. And I felt really warm. I felt really, it was just this incredible experience that I fell to my knees and I'm sobbing and I'm just going, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. And I remember I leapt out of the shower. Lord knows I didn't break every bone in my body. I leapt out of the shower and I was scrambling around my room trying to dig through piles and piles on my floor because at the time I was in college and I had remembered that I had picked up from a table, it said first aid kit for students or something. And I literally, Emily, I thought it was a first aid kit. Okay. It wasn't. It was a gosh darn Bible. That's what it was. Oh. And so I was so frustrated when I had gotten home to see that, but I knew it was still in my room. And so I was like, where is that first aid kit? I have to read this now because I believe. And
wow.
So that was the turning point for me. And it was truly an experience that I can't even look at it and be like, well, maybe I had a weird burrito and that, you know, there was just no doubt that that was a moment that I was not in control of. And essentially it was almost like someone was like focusing my head on a projector screen being like, hey, look at this for a second. And I was like, oh my gosh. Oh, wow. Shoot. anyway, that's what happened.
That's so powerful. I love that.
Thank you. Yeah, it was really amazing. And it was without a doubt something that I know in that moment what happened. And it was really powerful. So
it's a thing. This sounds weird because you're sharing this, but I'm going to share it because this morning I was sitting having quiet time and I've just been in this rough parenting place. Just more of the mom struggling and not the well, but really wanting to do a good job, but it's not going that well. And so I was like, Lord, I've been wanting these kids to change and trying to change them and trying super hard. And then just this morning, I was like, oh, Lord, make me the mom they need, because you obviously, my kids are adopted. You picked us, like you put us together in this different way. And so I'm going with it. But sometimes it just feels like we are pieces of two different puzzles. Mm-hmm. And that a lot of fear can play into that. So I was like, Lord, please make me the mom that these kids need, rather than please make these kids stop being so annoying or make them listen to me, please, for once. It was like he interrupted me and he said, I am. And just so, like you're saying, like, hold it. Like, I didn't think those thoughts. Right. I wasn't obviously trying to answer myself. And this doesn't happen on the regular at all. It was so startling that I like looked under my chair. I'm like, what? This is so weird. But it immediately, in a moment, I knew, A, he hears me. Mm-hmm. B, he's at work. He's on this case. He wants it to go well for me. And he cares more than I do that I become the mom that these kids need, mm-hmm. and that it not be such a uphill battle every minute of the day, which it has been lately. But anyway, I just sat and cried. And my husband's like, is everything okay in there? You're not usually bawling like at 6 a.m, but it was so powerful when God just interjects. And I mean, with just a couple words, you're like, hold it. Everything's changed. He's here. I forgot how near. I forgot how much he loved me. I forgot how capable he is. So it's funny you should say that, because I had that this morning.
Interesting that you then spoke to me later today. That's interesting how that was orchestrated.
It is. Yeah. Same burrito. So what advice would you give to a mom who is just really struggling in the Target? There's a bunch of meltdowns and crazy hair and McDonald's for breakfast. So.
Oh, man. Well, I'll tell you what, moms that give their kids McDonald's for breakfast, I don't really know how to associate with that. I don't know. I can't.
So funny. Whatever.
I truly feel that being a mom brings you all to the same level. You could be, you know, wherever it is in your life, whatever your financial situation is, whatever, you know, wherever it is that you live, whatever it is that you do, if you're married, if you're not, and motherhood levels that playing field such that we are all in these wonderful, but albeit trenches together. Mm. And whenever I'm out somewhere, Target, yes, that was actually probably incredibly appropriate, and I see that type of situation, the first thing I think of in my head is just, oh, solidarity, sister. I'm so right there with you. It's not happening in this moment that you are looking at me right now, but come find me in 5 minutes and I will be having that same moment in aisle 7. You know, it's going to be you just happen to catch me when it's not happening. And
yeah,
you know, it's funny actually that the other day that happened in front of the library. I'm walking with my kids and I see this mom trying to get her kids out of the car, and they look like the same age as my kids. They're like 5 and 3. She's getting out of the car, and this tiny little terrier that she must have had just in the car, you know, their family dog, I'm assuming, mm-hmm. the car wasn't infested. I mean, I think it was probably there. Jumps out of the car and she's freaking out because the dog is running one way and the kids are messing with each other on the sidewalk and they're running the other way, and she's got to get the dog, but she's got to watch her kids. And I just look at her from, I was probably like 20 yards away. I look at her and she looks at me and I just said, go, I got your kids. And that was it. I just hung out there with her kids for a few minutes and we just all sat and, you know, Lord knows what they were thinking, because they just look at me, this random chick that comes up, and I'm like, hey, you want to play with my kids? And, and then the mom runs off after the dog. But I mean, it is you kind of, that kind of message is what I want to relay, where it's just that feeling of we all have each other's backs, or we all have to have each other's backs. That idea of it takes a village. Like, this is so hard. It is so hard, and it's beautiful and it's amazing and it's so wonderful, but that doesn't make it not difficult. And the more that we can realize that we're all in this together, and that in a moment like that, you know, whether it's the dog running off, or, you know, she's carrying a tray of food and it drops or something, just that you can have that 2 second thought of just, hey, my crazy isn't happening right now, but yours is. How can I help you in your crazy? And while my crazy isn't happening, you know,
stick around a couple minutes, because I'm going to need you in a second.
Exactly. I'll scratch your back. You scratch.
Oh, man, that's so good.
Yeah.
Okay, so I have one more question for you.
Sure.
What can you not stop talking about right now?
Oh, I wish I was cool enough to have something that I was talking about all the time other than sleep. Like, let's get some. Or have you had any recently?
I don't know, something you just bought for summer or...
You know what?
Hair product.
Yeah, hair product. Let me tell you. I've got these ponytail holders and I just put them in my hair every day and it's great. Okay, something that I can't stop. Thank you. That was actually helpful in the prompting there. Not the hair care, but summer. We are becoming kind of like a fun outdoorsy family. And it's really exciting thinking about that happening. My kids are kind of at an age where they don't really eat dirt anymore and not as much as they used to. Yeah. So doing outdoorsy things isn't quite as scary as it was before. We had tried camping previously and it was an utter nightmare.
Okay.
And so we, I'd say probably, getting outside with the kids and going camping specifically, but really just being outdoors with them. I can't even tell you how many things we've already got planned for the summer where it's either a beach day or, hey, we're going to be camping for the weekend or just, I kind of feel like I've essentially initiated myself into this outdoorsy world. Like I know what I'm talking about. Like, oh yeah, no, we make s'mores. Yeah. Like on a real campfire. Yeah. We do that. Yeah, we do that all the time. I've done it.
So fun.
Yeah, that's kind of what we're doing right now. And I'm pretending like that's something that I'm supremely knowledgeable about, but really it's just kind of something that we're a new avenue that we are exploring in our family life. So
I love that.
Yep.
And you know what? Nobody needs to know that it isn't something you know about.
You know what I mean? Keep talking about it. I read this Wikipedia article and I'm just fine.
Go to REI, get some outdoor equipment. No one will be the wiser.
You're holding that upside down. That's fine. That's how I use it.
It's regular. This is how we do it in
Southern California. Maybe
the other reason. Yeah. So funny. Well, Nicole, seriously, been so fun to talk to you.
Thank you. It's been a really great experience, actually. I'm excited about it.
Yeah. Well, thank you for being willing to share your heart and your story and some really good stuff.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, enjoy the rest of your evening.
Thanks, you too.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Wasn't that funny? So many good takeaways. I loved hearing the story about how she helped that lady in the parking lot with her dog. We all need someone like Nicole to help us when the business hits the fan with our kids, don't we? I find in my real life that I want to help, but I stop myself in case people think I'm weird. So maybe I just need to be a little bit braver. So what will your strategy be to struggle well this week? Maybe you're super angry about God or at God, and you need to find a cute guy and start asking him some questions. Really, though, in all seriousness, ask your questions to God. The book of Job is full of him asking God questions. David in the Psalms says all kinds of crazy things to God. He can handle your crazy. So start talking to him. I double dog dare you. Maybe you're feeling like you just don't measure up to other moms. You're busy looking around comparing all the time. As your friend who you've never met in real life, I just need to tell you to stop it. It's not going to help anything. We all have gifts. Ask God what yours are. He wants to tell you. He wants you to use them. My favorite tip that she gave was about paying attention to what your kids already think is fun and then just doing that instead of going on Pinterest and having a breakdown. The first thing I thought of when she said that was that my kids are pretty fixated on the umbrellas. I don't know about your kids, maybe it's all kids. With their whole hearts, they want to play with them all the time, and I just say no. Blanket, just no. I don't know why I'm so against it, but it just doesn't make any sense to play with your umbrellas. I buy you toys, play with your toys, but no, they want the umbrellas. So anyway, I think this week I'm going to blow their little minds and just let them play with umbrellas. Probably just once. I'm pretty sure once is my limit. So there you have it. That's my big parenting plan for this week. What's yours? Find me on your favorite social media channel at Mom Struggling Well and tell me your strategy. Have a great week of struggling well.